findings and our recommendations. Number eight, I must admit, I do agree with what President Hogan said earlier, that even though we have embarked on this academic review process as a consequence of resource issues, I think it ought to be embedded and a part of our work. It's critical, because if not, I think that over time, things creep in to the into the community that may not be as relevant. So I'm one who advocates for a more systematic annual review of programs, and that it be transparent, collaborative, and respect the integrity of the discipline. Thank you.
I think we'll save any comments or questions until all of the chancellors have gone through. I do want to congratulate Paula. It's very important, I've stressed this, I think all the chancellors agree, to have benchmarkable data to compare ourselves with other best-in-class institutions, unit by unit. Because we all think that what we're doing is great and so on, but we really know how great we are only when we compare ourselves to other great institutions, great departments, and great colleges. That's the reference to academic analytics. Helps you to do just that. So, Harry, is it?
Mr. President, if you don't mind, I'd like to do it from here.
I don't mind.
Okay. Okay. And we have the wand here, Joe. Again, to remind you what we're talking about, Avijit described in detail the efforts we're making to make our administrative operation of the university as effective and efficient as possible. Now we're talking about the matter of academic programs, which is a complementary perspective. And we're using the term academic program review. And as I've thought about this, it seems to me that it boils down to essentially an assessment of the academic quality of our programs and ensuring academic quality. That's a starting point. But then the second piece of the story is making the best possible use of instructional resources that we can. And by instructional resources, I mean the teaching time of faculty. Now, of course, I'm talking about this in the UIS context, where our faculty are teacher scholars. Their primary basis, they're all engaged with their disciplines, but they have to demonstrate that they are excellent teachers in order to be retained by our campus. Now, so we want to make the best possible use of instructional resources while maintaining the quality of instruction, linking back to that first point. And as I've been thinking about this, it seems to me that as we become more and more dependent on student tuition to maintain the operation of the university, we have actually something that's equivalent to a moral obligation to make the best possible use of these instructional resources as possible. We don't want to waste the tuition dollars that the students are putting forward to help us sustain our operations. Now, some pieces of the story here about the UIS context. We have only 44 degree programs, 23 undergraduate programs, 20 master's programs, and one doctorate. And that's in contrast to the numbers at Chicago or Urbana. UIC has 222 degree programs. Urbana has 381 degree programs. So it gets to be a matter of scale. And one aspect of the scale that we operate on is that it's possible for Provost Pardee and myself to really know the score about each of our 44 degree programs. We can kind of keep track of that and work very closely with the deans and have a kind of intimate knowledge of how we're doing. Now, when it comes to the matter of program review, you can see in the second point there that this has been an ongoing thing for many years. And in the late 90s, we eliminated 10% of our academic degree programs, which for us was quite significant. But we keep an eye on how we're doing, and we have a regular cycle of program review, an 8-year cycle of program review, and it's a process. In the first year, when a program comes up for review, it does a self-study following a comprehensive set of guidelines that are available at that website. And then in the second year of each of these reviews, that self-study that was prepared by the department comes forward to governance committees, first at the college level, and then at the campus level, and then it's ultimately discussed in summary form at the campus senate. And at the end of the process, there's a memorandum of understanding that we have with each of the departments with respect to the recommendations that came forward in that program review that sets the stage for the next period of 8 years. And that MOU is signed by the department chair, the chair of the undergraduate graduate council, and the provost. Now, that comprehensive review includes a review of the curriculum, student and occupational demand, assessment of learning outcomes, and the contribution to the mission. Now, each of our departments has established learning outcomes for each of its degrees, and we not only want to see a report on how those are turning out, what the learning outcomes are at the point of this once every 8 years review, but there's also intermediate reports submitted by the departments regarding what the learning is that comes out of the degree programs that the students are following. Now, another piece of the story about UIS is that in general, we've seen a pattern of increasing enrollments for most of our departments. As you'll see in a moment, as a general principle, we're trying to get to the point where we reduce staffing in departments with significant enrollment decline. And here's something that illustrates what I'm talking about. The green departments there are ones that have experienced growth in the past 5 years, and anywhere from 10 students to 101 students in terms of headcount majors. The yellow bar there are programs that were essentially stable over the past 5 years, enrollments plus or minus 10 students during this time frame. And the programs shown in red experienced declines, which ranged from 14 students to 187 students. Now, the key thing from my point of view is that we're making decisions about staffing in relation to these and other figures that I'll describe in a moment. Barring other considerations, such as the department's contributions to general education, when faculty and programs that have experienced declines have left because of retirements or resignations or at the end of a clinical or visiting appointment, they have not, or going forward in time, will not be replaced. And we've already, looking at those red programs there, drawn down the staffing level, for example, in education leadership, management, and liberal studies, three of those programs that have experienced, I would say, notable declines in the past 5 years. Now, this process that I'm describing is instructional resource management, where you redirect, the deans reallocate positions from departments where they have lost headcount enrollments to departments like those green ones up there, where there has been enrollment growth. Now, this term instructional resource management is one that I've been using to try to convey to our administrators and our faculty the sort of general arena of management of resources devoted to teaching. And last year, I convened a task force in my former role as provost that I chaired, where we hammered out in a faculty administrative committee exactly what we mean and what we mean to do in terms of improving the effectiveness of the way that we manage our resources. And that report is up on the website there, and I invite you to take a look at it when you have a chance. But I would say one key idea that is now becoming more and more widely understood on our campus is that departments must pull their own weight. It's very simple. Departments must pull their own weight. And what I mean by that is that they have to generate tuition in that department that not only covers the salaries of the faculty, but also goes beyond that, because there's all the other support services that have to be supported through the tuition that, in effect, faculty generate. So as a rule of thumb, we're saying that our benchmark is the departments must generate 2 times the faculty salaries through tuition. That is for at the department level, not at the individual faculty member, but as at the department level, as part of their collective effort to generate 2 times their salaries in tuition. Now, then there's the matter of, well, how do we get there? How do we move toward more efficient and effective use of instructional resources? And, you know, it really starts with measurement. And it seems obvious in a way, but it's not so obvious. I had initiated this campaign to make more effective use of instructional resources, but how would you know if you're making more effective use of instructional resources unless you have a way of measuring your starting point, of measuring the effectiveness of the use of instructional resources? So we hashed out in that task force department performance metrics. And I want to acknowledge that Chancellor Alan Mears also talked about a similar thing with the use of the analytics group there. Ours are kind of homegrown. And the 4 key metrics that we're going to be looking at and are looking at for each department are what I'm calling utilization, which is the average difference between the number of seats that are available in a section, the capacity of that section, and how many of those seats are occupied. And obviously, we want to move that occupied seat measure up as close to the course cap as possible across the sections that are offered by a department. Then the next metric is a median seat count for a department, credit hours generated by the department, and then that item I was describing, the tuition revenue generated by the department. And interestingly, this matter of tuition revenue per dollar of faculty salary makes an accommodation for our graduate programs, because you'd expect those graduate programs to have lower enrollments in their sections. It's the nature of graduate education. But we recognize that graduate students are paying a higher level of tuition. So it kind of all works out for those graduate programs when we look at that metric. Now, to move toward more effective use of instructional resources, there are some actions that departments need to take. They need to look at their curriculum and see whether they're constraining enrollment in some sections by prerequisites that may not be actually needed. We need to improve course scheduling so that the sections are offered at times that work for students and not only for faculty. And in certain instances, again, keeping in mind the kind of place that we are, where we offer relatively small section sizes, in certain instances, we need to adjust those course caps upward so that the departments can be more productive. By the way, I appreciate the help that we're getting from AITS, our IT operation at the university level. Michael Heitz is a big supporter of this in helping us develop a dashboard for those 4 performance metrics. Now, is it working? Are we making headway? Well, as I mentioned, we are using the metrics to authorize or not authorize faculty hires. The deans, when they receive a request for a replacement position, are able to respond with the facts about where the department stands in relation to other departments in that college with respect to these metrics. We are, in certain instances, increasing course caps to meet departmental target enrollments. Again, this is a very sensitive issue at UIS because of the kind of place that we are. I think we have to be realistic and judicious while still being the kind of place where students can say, my professors know me. But it's a question of, well, what should that level be for a given course that's delivered with a certain approach? And finally, there's this matter of utilization, the ratio of occupied to available seats. And my last slide is one that I just couldn't be